And now, the Sandhills' number one morning show, Mornings with the Leader Man, here on Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB, and heard and seen around the world at talk973.com.
The best part of waking up is waking up with us.
Morning, Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. Welcome back to another afternoon of Mornings with the Leader Man. I said afternoon, morning. Along with me in studio is Moore County's one and only Mr. Stephen Woodward. Good morning again, Stephen.
Well, good evening, Brad. I mean, good morning, Brad. I guess we're in different time zones this morning. Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Leader Man. Good morning, everybody, on this frenetic Friday here in the sunny Sandhills.
That it is. Highs for us today coming in at 76 degrees. We've got a low this evening of 55. Currently outside, sunny, 44 degrees. Winds coming out of the, still calm. So that's a good thing. Still a little chilly. I just stepped outside a little bit ago. You definitely do still need a jacket if you're going to go to early voting. Regarding voting, you have got two locations to do so. First location is the Moore County Agricultural Center in Carthage. You can also vote at the Aberdeen Recreation Center right down U.S. Highway 1. If you're heading south, it's going to be on your right-hand side. That means your left hand if you're coming north. Hours of operation, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Saturday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Early voting runs through November the 2nd. That is next Saturday. Also, don't forget, if you have not registered to vote yet, you can still do so during early voting, which means if you have not registered during early voting, you cannot go and register or vote on election day. So get out there, get it done. Take your friends, take your family.
Yes, and there's still plenty of time to vote. I mean, today is Friday, and then you can vote all day today till 7:30. You can vote tomorrow from 8 to 3. There will be no voting this coming Sunday. And then we'll get right back at it next week. So that's all very good news. And just quickly before we get to our guest in the studio this morning, another blowout day for Republicans at early voting across the state. Yesterday on day 8 of early voting, 98,798 Republicans showed up to vote. That was 14,000 more than the Democrats who showed up, in a mere total of 84,000. And just as importantly, nearly 90,000 unaffiliated voters showed up to vote yesterday across the state on day 8. And by comparison, 15,000 more Republicans showed up to vote yesterday on day 8 than in 2020 on day 8. So the movement to encourage early voting is clearly gaining traction, and that's all very good news. And Brad, I think it's very nice of you to help the Democrats know that if you're going south and the building is on one side, to remind them that when you're going north, it's on the other side. That's very helpful. I'm glad you did that.
Well, I just thought about that. Every day I say, if you're heading south, it's on your right-hand side. I just kind of, had a mental note that I probably should say, if you're going north, it's on the left-hand side.
That's right. We call that northbound discrimination, and that's not allowable. I'm sorry.
So, anyways, in studio with us, as I've been alluding to since yesterday, we have Vinny Smith, who is a gubernatorial candidate from the Constitution Party. Vinny, I want to bring you in. Thank you for coming in studio and spending some time with us today. I'm going to start off with just a very simple, easy question. Tell everybody here in Moore County and the surrounding Sandhills area a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, and first, I just wanted to say thank you, Brad and Stephen, for having me here today. So about me, I grew up in New York and moved to Durham, North Carolina when I was 16 years old after my father retired from the police force in New York. I did my junior senior year in high school, Durham, Jordan, and then went to the Naval Academy Preparatory School in Newport, Rhode Island for 1 year, and then to the Naval Academy. At the Naval Academy, I was a three-sport athlete. I was secretary of my class there. Once I graduated, I was a naval intelligence officer, and served for 5 years in the Navy. I have a master's degree in management, PhD in business management. Moved back to Durham in 1998 with my wife and then two small children. I'm the author of six Christian books, and my son and I, we have a small business in Cary. It's North Carolina Esports Academy. It's an education, technology, and youth development video gaming center. And then we also have a nonprofit that offers the same programs that we offer for our for-profit business for at-risk youth in underserved communities, and youth with autism. And I work with the Constitution Party, and which is kind of why I'm here speaking with you today. And that's a little bit of background on me.
Okay. I appreciate the background there. So one question that I have, and most of our listeners are probably familiar with parties like the Green Party, stuff like that. Constitution Party is somewhat fairly new from my understanding and kind of from my research on it. Explain a little bit about what the Constitution Party is and what it stands for.
Sure. So the Constitution Party, as in the name says, Constitution, we really believe in adhering to the Constitution, as far as the U.S. Constitution and the North Carolina Constitution. Constitution is very important because when we have government, and government is here to basically to protect the liberties of the people, and the question then can become, what protects the people from government? And that's why we have a constitution. The constitution governs government. And if you look in Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, it shows what the enumerated powers of the federal government are. And then we also have a North Carolina constitution. And within it, it's basically, you could say, the job description of government. It tells you what the roles of the governor is, what the roles of the legislature is. So that's why the Constitution is important, because it's important for the people to know what their, because the people are actually the employer, and the elected officials work for the people. So it's very important for the people to know what their employees, what their roles and responsibilities are, so they can hold them accountable. The Constitutional Party itself, we of North Carolina, we have seven core values. So we believe in the sanctity of life, traditional family, religious freedom, national sovereignty, anti-socialism, private property rights, and we're pro-Second Amendment.
Okay.
Well, somewhere Josh Stein is curled up in a corner because he doesn't like any of that stuff. And in fact, he just is so disdainful of the North Carolina Constitution. This is our Attorney General, by the way, that he kept the constitutionally enshrined requirement that a photo ID be presented in order to vote. He kept that tied up in the courts against the will of the people and the Constitution for a number of years until just last spring when it was finally enacted permanently. And now we are, in fact, presenting photo IDs at the polls. At least we should be. But anyway, it's so great to hear somebody articulate the tenets of the Constitution of both our state and our county, because, you know, we just came off of a period of 2 to 3 years when our governor, Roy Cooper, was so disdainful of our Constitution that we were living a life of lockdowns and closed businesses and other restrictions that were clearly unconstitutional, and nobody cared, and he certainly didn't care.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm one question, and then you can go, Vinny. Speaking of Josh Stein, what sets you apart specifically from Josh Stein? Obviously, Stephen just kind of highlighted some of the work that Josh did as a attorney general, or I should say lack thereof.
The damage, you mean, not the work.
But what sets you apart from, say, Josh Stein and Mark Robinson? What would make you a good alternative to those two candidates?
Well, I think one of the big things is, I think CBS 17 came up with an article maybe about 2 months ago now, and it was talking about all of the money, $77 million at the time, I think, that has been raised going towards those campaigns, and I think they were expecting it by Election Day to cap out $125 million. This could probably be the most money raised in that gubernatorial race in the entire country. And you think about all of that money, and when I talk to people and I say, where do you think the money's coming from? Is it coming from everyday people like you and me, or is it coming from special interest groups, political action committees, and super PACs? And that's where the people say that's where they feel the money's coming from. And then my next question is, well, then who do you think that they're going to be beholden to? Who do you think that they are going to represent when they're in office if they're taking if they're receiving this money? And people always say, well, you know, to those special interest groups and political action committees. I do not take any money from any type of special interest group, PAC, super PAC. And that's one of the things that separates me apart, is that I am here to hold fast to first to God, to the U.S. and North Carolina Constitution, and then to the will of the people. And that's how, you know, our forefathers, that's how they designed it, and that's how they wanted it. And so that's one of the big points that I make, and I say, which separates me from from the other candidates.
So obviously, there's been a lot of focus on the two mainstream party candidates, Mark Robinson, the Republican candidate, our lieutenant governor, and Josh Stein, the attorney general, an extremely radical Democrat, who will make Roy Cooper look like Mr. Rogers, I think, if he's elected governor. But tell us a little bit about what you plan to do with this experience running for governor. In other words, the election will come and go. It sounds to me like you have a lot to offer our state and the community where you live. Do you have any other aspirations politically, or is this just sort of a one-shot deal for you, or what is your plan?
Yes, well,
because you've got a resume and you've got passion, and you've got authenticity, all of which should be should be able to allow you to fill some capacity as a public servant.
Right. And to answer that question, I'd like to go into a little background of why I'm here, why I'm running. In order for a third party to get on the ballot and to have ballot access, we had to go out and receive thousands of signatures. And so it took the Constitution Party, it took us 3.5 years in order to receive ballot access up until July. We had a lot of challenges with the State Board of Elections, a lot of things we had to fight along the way. But as I was out and talking with thousands of North Carolinians, one of the things a couple of things that they mentioned to me was that they wanted more choices. That's the reason why they were signing our petition. They wanted more choices for political parties, and they wanted more options, specifically they were talking about within the governor's race. That's one of the things that really inspired me to run, because if you think about government and an elected official, it should be about the will of the people, serving the people. And I said, well, this is definitely a way for me to serve the will of the people. To your question, once the election is over, regardless of the outcome, I am still going to stay involved, because there's a lot of work that I feel that needs to be done. The Constitution Party has built up so much momentum, I would say, over the past 3.5 years, and in the last 3.5 months since I filed as governor, and we have five other candidates running as well. We have a lieutenant governor who is running. That's Wayne Jones. We have Kevin Hayes, who's running for U.S. Congress in District 6. We have Darren Warren, who's running for county commissioner in Alexander County. We have Alvin Robinson, who's running for NC State Senate in District 26. And I know I'm leaving out one, but I'll come back to it later. But so we have these candidates who are running. And so we are going to build this party up, and we're going to continue the momentum. And because we know that the people are looking and seeking out other options, we've been working at the state fair over the past week, and we're going to be here, you know, throughout the remainder of the state fair. And it was continuing to hear so much about people saying, oh, well, we're glad to know that there are more options out there. We haven't heard of your party before. We're at the beginning stages right now of building this party up. And so this is just the beginning, and I'm going to continue on. What I may run for in the future, that remains to be seen, but I'm definitely going to, people are still going to continue to hear from me and hear my voice as I go out there to continue to serve the will of the people.
And as the Constitution Party, is it gaining traction on a national level as well, outside of North Carolina?
Yes, and we do have a national Constitution Party, and we are on, for the presidential election, we are on the ballot in 12 states, and that's something also that we want to continue to grow that, so that we can continue to be on more states. Similar to us, it's very challenging to get on the ballot in various states. It takes a lot of work, and so once we are able to stay on the ballot here, we have to get 2% of the governor's vote in order to remain on the ballot. So now, over the next, to the midterms and over the next 4 years, instead of us going out and having to petition for ballot access, we will focus on growing the party. And so that's what we'll be able to do, and then also be able to provide assistance to some of our other states that are running.
Okay. I want to jump into some key issues here, because we've got just under 10 minutes left here. So the Constitution Party has highlighted 12 key issues. I'm not going to go through all of them with you to get your thoughts on where you would stand as governor if elected for this state. But one of the things that I think is kind of big on everybody's radar is drugs, right? So according to the Constitution Party's website, the federal government's only responsibility is preventing drug abuse is to control our borders. Anything else is relegated to individual states. So with that in mind, what would you do if elected to help combat the fentanyl crisis that we're seeing in North Carolina, methamphetamine, that kind of stuff? What is your vision if you were, you know, governor?
Well, one of the things I think for anything when we talk about certain issues, I think a big part is education. And I think that we have to do a lot to, from an education standpoint. And I always believe in that we have to have education, and especially education for youth, because as they come up and they grow up and come through the system, you know, getting to young people early and getting in certain messages out. So it would be, I say, working with the community, working with churches, and because. In working with those organizations where the people that already they're coming to, they're comfortable in those types of settings, and working with any of these types of organizations and really being able to get that message of awareness out. And also that's where also people feel comfortable as far as coming to express there's an issue. They have a problem, or they know someone that has an issue or a problem. And I think that's one of the things that we can do is from an education standpoint is that whole piece as far as the community coming together and helping the people. In many issues, I always go to what can we do as a community, what can we do as a people first, as opposed to government stepping in and having control, or us looking to government for solutions. I think when we look for government for too many solutions, that's when we start giving too much power to government. And then over time, you find yourself where, you know, tyranny can set in, the government then starts to kind of usurp power. And the more that we can do to help one another within our community, I think that's how we can combat these issues.
Well, and you make a very important point about education and government, because government has effectively dismantled public education. It has become especially the enemy of children with any kind of learning disabilities or any kind of socioeconomic issues. We see that reading and math proficiency is abysmal. And so if those kids are falling through the cracks when it comes to basic fundamentals of learning, just imagine what they're not learning about why you don't want to experiment with drugs, why you don't want to take the irreversible step of gender transitioning, and in all of those key categories, which we used to take for granted with public education, that they were going to take care of our kids and educate our kids and set them on a path toward becoming productive citizens. That's sort of like a quaint little bygone notion now. And you're seeing the exodus from public schools because of that. So it seems to me that you're right on point with if we're going to clean up drug addiction problems and the endless cycle of addiction among our youth and beginning with their parents, unfortunately, in many cases, it has to start with education reform.
Right.
I mean, I think you could run on that all day long.
Well, you bring up a good point, and I want to bring this up, and I'm continuously harping on this. So one of your ads that you have running on the station, Vinny, says that you would abolish or get away from property tax on homes. being that taxes sometimes fund a bunch of programs and relating to education, what are your thoughts on the opportunity scholarship that allows students from public schools or what have you, parents, to be involved in making the decision to allow, you know, the taxpayer money to funnel into letting those kids go to, say, private schools and things like that?
Well, yes. Well, I can tell you, one, because of what, and this is, was over 20 years ago now, what I saw from coming in the within the public school system, I did some research and I saw who was influencing public policy in school system as well as the curriculum. And I didn't like what I saw. And I went to my wife, I said, we need to homeschool. And so that's what we did. We homeschooled our children early on, and then they went to private school. And like I said, that decision was made strictly because of what I didn't like as far as what I saw in the public school system. And like you said, there are parents that are fleeing from the public school system. It's not to be a elitist or anything like that. It's because the public school is not providing the young people, with the children, what they need. And it's too many. They're promoting values to the children that go outside of what the parents want. So because of that, I do believe that if parents and grandparents, if they're paying money that goes to education, then that money should be able to follow that child, whether it's homeschooling, because they're going to have costs to pay for school supplies and different things for their child, and it should follow them if they are going to private school. We say that, teachers shouldn't have to come out of their pocket to buy certain supplies and within the classroom, which I agree with that, but same thing, if someone's homeschooling, they shouldn't have to pay for those supplies either. That money should come to them as well as
well, if you were homeschooling 20 years ago, you were a pioneer in that regard, because that was considered sort of a radical thing to do in terms of teaching kids. And now, of course, it has become very normalized out of necessity, and so more and more parents are choosing that option. And you know, you meet homeschooled kids, they're always the kids who are responsible, show up on time, are polite, treat others with respect, and succeed in life. How about that? What a novel concept that is, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And I can tell you this, that my son, or the business that we have, he started that business up, you know, being a homeschooler.
Because he was prepared to be a productive member of society.
Yeah. Be an innovative thinker, absolutely.
Well, thanks for coming in this morning. It's very inspirational to have you here. And best of luck to you in this campaign and for what comes thereafter.
Well, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thank you, Vinny. And I hope you as the listener out there got a good sense of what this party is all about, what Mr. Vinny Smith is all about. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in, as always. We have got another special guest coming up Monday morning at 7:30. He is running for NC 78
re-election, Neil Jackson.
Neil Jackson. So make sure to tune in for that. And as my daily reminder, make sure you go out and see each and every one of our advertisers that you hear on this station. They are the lifeblood of our economy, and every dollar that you spend with them here in Moore County stays here. So for me, Stephen Woodward, and everybody here, thank you and have a great and wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday morning.
When I come back, you'd better be laughing.
So, what have we learned? Heck, I don't know. But this is one crazy show. Bye now.
Cut, cut. That's it. Go home, everybody. None of this ever happened.
Well, y'all come back now, you hear?
I think we're through here.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much, man. That's pretty much all I got, man.
Okay. Class dismissed. Rock on!
Well, let me tell you something. Everything comes to an end.
Broadcasting from the top of the North Carolina Sandhills, 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM, WEEB, Southern Pines, Pinehurst, Aberdeen.